I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University. Are you in Fremantle or Sydney or Broome or perhaps Lyon or Paris, Martin? Where are you today?
I'm on leave at the moment, but being the dedicated person that I am, Michael, there's no way I wanted to miss the view. So I'm joining you regardless because there's so many interesting things to talk about.
Well, there's so much to talk about. I just brought up the BBC website, Martin. You have headlines like this: US and Iran trade attacks as Khomeini is buried. Charlie Kirk murder suspect told roommate he wished he hadn't done it. Ukraine strikes Russian ships near Crimea, escalating attacks on fuel supplies. Burnham set to be next PM as 322 Labour MPs back him in. Mbappe and Dembele send France into the World Cup semi-finals and so on, Martin. There's no mention of the Origin result, the Fremantle performance last night. Look, we'll just have to come back to those. This is why you cannot rely entirely on these authoritative websites, Martin. Nor did they mention that there's going to be a by-election in the state seat in Western Australia's Secret Harbour. Great name for a suburb where Paul Papalia, the Labor minister, has recently, for personal family reasons, resigned from the parliament. So, what's going to happen in Secret Harbour? Are we going to see Pauline Hanson turn up to win it for the First Nation? What do they call themselves? One Nation.
Well, let's start there then, Michael, on that long, long list. Secret Harbour is going to be having a by-election very shortly because the long-serving member, Paul Papalia, who'd been there for almost 20 years and so and was facing personal circumstances, which he's alluded to, for resigning that seat. That all makes sense, but it's a big headache for Labor, Michael, because Secret Harbour had the second highest, if you include Mandurah, One Nation vote at the 25 state election last year. And the One Nation in polling is about a bit over quadrupled its vote from that election. So if you translate last year's vote in Secret Harbour and you equate it to the statewide vote in recent polling, you've got at least the mid-30s, maybe higher in a primary vote there. And then when you have a by-election, Michael, people tend to protest vote more, a lot more. So it's ripe for the picking, I'd suggest. And One Nation have got every right to think that they're a real chance here.
Do we know who's going to run in the seat? Are the Libs going to go dead, or is the Country Party going to put up a candidate?
Well, the Libs are mused about running. They only got 25% in the electorate last year. So I very much doubt they could win it. And actually, I think they're a lot smarter to sit this one out. Of course, there are all the thorny questions about will they or won't they preference One Nation, which they'll get if they run. And they're probably better off giving One Nation a clear run. But I guess we'll see what decision they come up with, Michael. They've indicated they'll run, but they haven't announced a candidate or anything like that. Labor's announced Georgia Tree. He grew up in the area. It's been a staffer for a federal MP, and One Nation haven't announced a candidate yet.
Well, I can also tell you that Georgia Tree wrote a book published by Fremantle Press, and you'll find a podcast with her on Fremantle Shipping News if you go in and search. Interestingly, Paul Papalia was in the Navy for many years, Martin, and I wonder what he thought when he saw that the Chinese had set off a long-range missile with a dummy nuclear head, not far, all that far at least, from where the Australian Prime Minister Albanese was meeting with his counterpart in Fiji to sign some agreements.
Well, the Prime Minister's visit to these Pacific nations was very well timed, Michael. Timed because it had some embarrassing domestic issues he wanted to get out of the road of, but also because this missile gave a talking point, really, for both him and some of these Pacific nations to express concern and alarm. So I would say it not only concerned Australia, but a range of other actors. And it just happened to land near several of those Pacific islands that were close to Taiwan politically. So I just don't know if that was all coincidence, Michael, or something much, much more.
Well, I watched the very impressive professor of strategic studies from a Chinese university in Beijing. I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me, Martin. He was on 7:30 Report with Sarah Ferguson the other night, and he was making the point, elegantly but bluntly, obviously perhaps, that China is a big player. China is a world power. It stands there with US and Russia, perhaps. And they just wanted to let everybody know that they've got these things, they make them, and if anyone wants to take them on, they're quite happy to show what they've got. They're not planning, however, to use them because they're peacemakers. I mean, it does sound like the sort of statement that a world power would make, expressly or more subtly, Martin.
I think that professor's probably articulated very well exactly the message China wants to share. We're here, we're powerful, we've got weapons, we're not planning to use them, but just want you to know that it's a deterrent, isn't it? You would say.
Well, the US used to think it was pretty much the only such state on the planet. They thought they were going to have some sort of worked out agreement with Iran to stop all of the killings and bombings and disruption to world trade over the Hormuz Straits and so on. But it looks like we're back to the future. They're all shooting at each other again, Martin. What do you make of it? Is it going to be back to, as I say, back to the future?
Well, here we are again. In the view last time, Michael, we expressed some cynicism that the MOU would last, and that because the issues were all unresolved. Look, I think it was good that there was a temporary respite in the fighting, but we're right back to where we started. US attacking Iran, Iran then in turn attacking its neighbours, the Straits of Hormuz closed up to traffic again, and another intractable situation. So all of that diplomacy hasn't really got the US very far. Now remember, the problem was there was never much trust in the first place. US bombed Iran literally in the last during the negotiations over a nuclear weapon, and I think actually, restoring trust in those sort of circumstances is probably hard to do.
Well, that's all been happening while the Iranians were sending off in some style in Tehran their former supreme leader, whose son is now the supreme leader. You'd be forgiven for thinking, wouldn't you, that perhaps not only is Iran emboldened by all of this, but they may well be strengthened. And if the US wanted regime change, it probably set it back by a good 20 years.
Certainly, the regime doesn't appear to have loosened its grip. And we had these scenes of huge, huge crowds coming out for the late Ayatollah's funeral. Now, let's be honest, whether everyone feels that they've got a choice about attending such public events or not in Iran is another matter, Michael. But it does show the hold that the regime still has on its people. And that hasn't loosened, it's probably strengthened.
Well, some sort of counterpoise to all of that, in some strange sort of way, were all of these NATO leaders turning up in Ankara, in Turkey, and being welcomed by President Erdogan there. So, what did you make of that? Trump turned up for a while, badmouthed everybody, and made a few threats here and there, and then went home again.
Yeah, so this was supposed to be an opportunity to bring NATO leaders together, and physically that's true. But a series of comments by Trump in disparaging NATO and several leading members of NATO again didn't help, arguably. He was only there for a short time before he left. Erdogan and Trump seemed to get along quite well. Now, Erdogan's an interesting figure, Michael, because he's a fairly authoritarian leader in Turkey. He succeeded in removing a lot of domestic opposition, but he sits at a bit of a crossroads because he has a good relationship with most of the Arab states, and he's kind of, well, he's in NATO, but he's also in the Middle East. So I think he quite enjoys dealing with Trump, and Trump uses him as another tool for diplomacy at different times.
I was bemused to see that Keir Starmer was given a gift, as I think many of the other NATO leaders were, of a revolver and ammunition. It made one wonder what the intent of all of that was, Martin. What did you make of it?
Well, Keir Starmer effectively used one only a couple of weeks ago, didn't he? By politically assassinating himself after it appears lots of other people have tried to do it. It was an unusual gift, but maybe that's Erdogan's style. And then all those other leaders are going to be bringing that back home. And it was a vintage one as well at that. So it's quite a striking gift.
Well, it made world headlines. I'm not sure though that Prime Minister Modi of India has made world headlines because he's currently here visiting Australia. He was where we normally play football at the Marvel Stadium in Melbourne, which I think is the sixth or the eighth most livable city in the world in the latest poll, Martin. Sydney and Adelaide get mentions as well, but not Perth or Fremantle.
There's a lot of things going on here that's quite interesting because the Indian community in Melbourne's quite large, so it's a very significant constituency. And having the Prime Minister, no less, come to Melbourne was in some ways a boon for Jacinta Allan, and she made a big fuss of him, etc. But he's not uncontroversial. He's certainly amongst the diaspora in particular, because his critics argue that he's wound back a lot of rights and protections during his time as Prime Minister, and silenced critics. And sometimes the people that leave the country do so for a reason. So, he's certainly got a lot of his supporters as well. He's won multiple national elections in a row. It's a bit like Anthony Albanese. He's not, going overseas. Some people love him, some people won't. And of course, Indian immigration is itself the target for One Nation supporters and those types. So they'll probably be using that as ammunition as well, I suspect.
But as an economic partner, it does appear that India is going to become more and more important to Australia than it ever has, Martin.
You're absolutely right there. And there's no doubt that Australia and India, when you met with Anthony Albanese, and there's been a lot of work between both those two powers in a world which is increasingly fragmented, working productively with India on trade and other matters really does matter. And we already have some of those relationships in place, and our government's seeking to improve those across the board as well. So there are many different elements or dimensions to this partnership, Michael.
Well, I suppose it's unlikely that we'll see Marine Le Pen, the far right French leader, here anytime soon. She's been battling some convictions in the courts. She had a partial success, but she's appealing that as well. I say unlikely we'll see her here because she's sort of got a tag around her ankles and doesn't seem to be able to go very far and probably can't get on a plane and leave the country. What's going on in France?
Well, Marine Le Pen was originally banned for 60 months, which is a long time, from running for office because of misuse of European Union funds. She's appealed, and the appeals court reduced that sentence. Part of it was suspended, and she can now run. Now, this is a very significant for French politics because she's finished second the last couple of times, and the polling seems to suggest, as did the last parliamentary results, that she has a very good chance of winning. And being from the far right, you would have a populist far right president of France. And given that France is one of the most prominent countries in Europe and a real decision maker, that would have all sorts of ramifications, including in places like Ukraine, Michael. So watch that space. I think that's a really significant turn of events.
Martin, I promised at the beginning we'd get to the serious news. I suppose we have to start with the World Cup. Of course, President Trump unsuccessfully in the wash-up intervened, it seems, to get a red card on one of the US players reversed, but they still lost. Overnight, France has won, or this morning really our time, 2-0 over Morocco. Morocco have been greatly fancied, and of course there are really strong connections between France and Morocco historically. Mbappe scored in the 60th minute and Dembele in the 66th, and people are a bit disappointed with Morocco. But the World Cup as a political spectacle, it can be analysed that way, can't it?
Politics and sport, you would think they don't combine, but often they do. I think probably the best example of that is Donald Trump trying to weigh in successfully, it looks like, in allowing their star striker for the US to play against Belgium. So he's successful in getting into play. I think it probably unsettled the US team because they lost very badly, but they also lost a lot of support. And it has all that smelliness of the Trump era where fair play, anything is sort of bundled under the carpet as long as we win in the name of winning. So there's a good example right there. But the FIFA's long been embroiled in all sorts of political scandals, not least of when Australia lost out to Qatar. Michael, in hosting the World Cup, and the money that may or may not have changed hands around that.
Don't forget that FIFA awarded President Trump the FIFA Peace Award after he didn't talk them into giving him the Nobel one, Martin.
Well, that actually occurred whilst he was bombing Iran. So there's a FIFA's got a bit of a history of dubious acts.
Not perhaps geopolitics, but it's certainly national politics when the Maroons play the Blues in the State of Origin rugby, Martin, and the Blues took it out in Brisbane. It's amazing. They won the Origin Series this year. Many of our listeners across the eastern states were probably stayed up very late and still up enjoying the success.
Yes, to our many New South Wales and Queensland listeners, Michael, congratulations to New South Wales. I did watch it. I love a bit of Origin, and they were superb. And Nathan Cleary was particularly superb. He scored most of their points. And to win in Brisbane is an extraordinary effort.
Well, that'll before long be followed by the grand final in the AFL. And last night, Martin, you and I had our eyes glued to the top of the table battle between number one on the ladder, Fremantle, and number two on the ladder, the Sydney Swans. Fremantle kicked 11 points, no goals to half time, and yet came home with the wettest sail of all time, kicking the next, I think, what was it, 16 goals.
They utterly dominated, 9 goals in the last quarter alone. They probably should have done better on the scoreboard in the first half because they kicked 0 goals, 11 behinds. But gee, when they got going in the second half, they just blew their opposition away. They have to be favourites now for the Premiership.
Well, I've got my ticket, Martin. My air flights are booked. The only big question is a serious political one. If Fremantle pull off the grand final this year, it'll be their first in their history. Will it lead to a new move for Western Australia to secede, or at least Fremantle declare itself a republic independent of the rest of the country?
I think I don't know about secession, but I don't know that you'll be able to shut up Fremantle people for a long, long time. It's been a while coming. If it happens, it's been a while coming, and they'll be painting the town purple.
And I suspect the entity at the lead of the move to paint the town purple will be the Notre Dame University based here in Fremantle, Martin.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the West Ends of Fremantle erupt. Michael, I was in Fremantle for their last grand final, and it was a fairly colourful, extraordinary event down at the Esplanade. So, for all of our local Fremantle listeners, stay tuned. It's going to be one hell of a ride.
And I'm fully expecting the Vice Chancellor of the University, Professor Campbell, to be wearing a new bright, shiny purple suit to all official functions. Do you reckon there's a chance?
Oh, well, you can only put it to him and see.
Well, while I'm getting my correspondence to him ready, Martin, I'd better let you get back to recreating in your time off. Thanks for joining me today. It's been most interesting, and see you next Friday.
Always a pleasure, Marvel.